couldn't ignore, you know? And it's like, when I came to, when I came back to Philadelphia and went back to school, I left the party, and I met MOVE members, and I saw how, you know, it was no jewelry, it was none, you know, none of this sense of riches are important. It struck me, you know, and years later when I met John Africa, and after he had beat this federal beef, and he's sitting in a house in West Philadelphia on Osage Avenue, in a pair of jeans, barefoot, and everybody else is sitting down on the ground and kicking it, just like me, and he just rapping. I was struck by the sense of leveling and the equality, you know, that that was a stark difference than, you know, the wealth that I saw that was squandered in the West Coast among the party. And that was a deep, I guess, experience for me. The other thing is that what pushed me closer to MOVE in the transition from probably a socialist-oriented Panther to a naturalist-oriented movement was the repression, simply, that the system visited on MOVE. It was something like, it excelled even the repression on the party. Other than the LA chapter, perhaps, under Geronimo in 1971 or 70, and on Central Avenue in LA, no Panther officer had been bombed. You know what I mean? Been shot up, certainly, and did a lot of damage, but no Panther officer had been bombed. As a reporter coming to cover reality and walking into a courtroom and seeing the rape of MOVE members' rights, quote unquote, by the honored judiciary, no reporter could dare claim objectivity, and it's in that face. I mean, instead of push me away, it bound me closer to people who would not bend under that obvious a repression.
Was there any effort on the part of the Ministry of Education or whatever the equivalent would be in the MOVE to counter the truly frightful press? I mean, I remember, I'll be honest, I was influenced by, although I considered myself a loyal adherent of a radical part of American citizenry, I was unquestionably influenced by the frightful allegations made about MOVE in Philadelphia at that time. I was prejudiced.
As were we all. I mean, it wasn't like it was just Herman that got, it was like me too. And like, I can remember reading stories about MOVE long before I met them. And that could have tainted my meeting them.
Yeah.
You know, remember when I talked about the kind of revulsion, get away from it, you know. But meeting them is a revelation. You know, it made me question and challenge all the stuff I'd read. And I remember a case, this is long after I'd, you know, come over to MOVE side, but again, as a reporter, I was more sensitive to some things that happened. And there was a case of, in May of 1981, MOVE members who were underground in a chapter up in Rochester, New York, were raided by the FBI, ATF, and all them boys. And they were extradited later to Philadelphia. Well, after they were convicted of riot charges and weapon charges and all this, there was a trial and a sentencing hearing in Philadelphia, and before Judge Kendall Scheuer. The point of this is this. When the article came out covering the sentencing hearing, there was a recitation of what happened at the sentencing hearing, what moved people said, and right before the end of the article, almost a gratuitous quote, not attributed to anyone, but just written generally by the reporter to the reader, saying to the effect that MOVE is an organization that rejects modern technology, they don't wash, they don't bathe, you know, this and that. And I knew the reporter, right? I'd been very close with her for a while. So on MOVE's behalf, I put her in contact with some MOVE members who wanted to ask why that was written in there. Why did she write that? You know, my question was logical. It was like, well, unless you live with someone, how would you know whether they bathe or not? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How would you get that kind of information? She defended off. She defended herself. She said, look, I didn't do that. She said, my editor put that in there. And I said, damn, okay. You know, and she was the kind of woman that was not, you know, just, she would have rebelled and argued. She wasn't just fending me off with a lie, you know.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
the truth
yeah.
that when it comes to MOVE, the system very clearly uses all of their sharp talents in the media to distance people from MOVE. In fact, the bombing of May 13th, 1985 could not have occurred had not MOVE been publicly isolated.
That's right.
Through the media. You know, they performed a very good function. You know, it's like the dehumanization of the MOVE members. You know, they did the Saddam Hussein number. You know, they were, you know, and it works because we believe that which we read.
Parenthetically, do you think there's an element of this in the way the Western press is dealing with Saddam Hussein?
Absolutely.
You do?
Totally, yes. Because, you know, one cannot go from being a friend to a demon. It's the demonization of Saddam Hussein. I mean, this guy is armed to the teeth with United States weaponry. And that's because for 10 years, when he was fighting Iran, it was the United States that armed him to the teeth. He was a friend, he was an ally, he was a, you know,
yeah.
he might not have been a nice guy, but he's our, you know, he might be a bastard, but he's our bastard type of thing. Only when he started to stand up for Iraqis, right, and say, well, look, the Kuwaitis are selling this, that oil far and above the level set by OPEC, we're being bled by it, we're not going to stand for it anymore. You know, now you've got a war, not for that illusion called democracy, because Kuwait and Saudi Arabia could hardly be called democracies. You know, you got a war for big oil. You got a war for Standard Oil, Exxon, Mobil Corporation. You know, I mean,
this business of Saudi Arabia giving a couple of billion to support the war.
Thanks.
That's right.
Yeah, it's
that
insane.
We have to hold on about 8 billion, but we will give you 2.
Okay, yeah. Is 2 enough?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's insane.
Why did the American people, I just, you know, they got the information out there. Oh, yeah, that's what annoys me. They have it right there. You can see a lot of this.
But the point is this, that what you have now, and probably worse than any period in American history, probably in the last several generations at least, is an American public that are largely illiterate, that follow the trends through Dan Rather's mouth as opposed to reading and studying.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid.
That's true.
Yeah.
But you know, it's always sort of ironical because, you know, the left press will say, well, they don't print the truth, but you know, they do have a hell of a lot of the truth in there.
Absolutely.
It's just,
it's overwritten.
People won't interpret. They want they don't want to think.
But I, getting back to MOVE, I don't think we've lived long enough.
I guess I'll have to go out and use the can.
It's
nice one out there for me.
Yeah, there is a very. I haven't been in Europe.
This chair is going to shrink. Okay.
I don't think a better job has ever been done in any city we've lived in. We've been in New York, New Orleans, Philadelphia, other places. Of the way all members of MOVE were demonized, and the whole movement was vilified. I don't think that job has ever been done any more effectively than the Philadelphia press, and maybe the national press, did with it.
I agree.
I've never seen anything like it.
I agree. I mean, I can't argue with it, in a sense.
Because I'm ashamed in retrospect, because I've always, for a long time in my adulthood, known what goes on in the press, the regular press. But I was taken in by that. You know, they must have done it was a miraculous job.
They've done a hell of a job. I mean, it's like, if we were just sitting theorizing, right, and talking about possibilities and probabilities, and talked, well, I bet you, and I just throw this possibility out to you, I bet you I could bomb those son of a bitches, and nobody go to jail but anybody that survives, and yeah. No cop, and you know, you're crazy, not in America, not in the 1980s, but it can happen, it did happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's precisely because of demonization of MOVE members as done by the Philadelphia and in large part the national press. You know, in any other perspective, Ramona Africa would be hailed as a hero, you know. She's largely ignored. She's done 7 years almost at Muncie, or five now, but she's, you know, sentenced to 7 years at Muncie. And except for people in Europe, in Germany, in England, where there's a Ramona Africa Support Committee, and poor people, you know, around the country who know MOVE from the prisons, who've not read about MOVE but met MOVE people and experienced the teachings of Giant Africa's, lived through MOVE people's lives. You know, she lives alone.
Yeah.
You know, and that is an obscenity. You know.
Of course.
And so the other thing is that, as a reporter, I saw a lot of it happening, and probably as a reaction to that, again, it's like, just like the repression attracted me to MOVE, or their reaction to that repression, rather, the blanket of hatred and vilification and demonization that covered MOVE attracted me to try to push to counterbalance that, you know, using what talents I possess as a writer and as a broadcaster. I knew, and I know now, that if people met MOVE, it would put the lie to everything they've ever read, you know.
Yeah.
But because we were not numerically great, you know, because we could not publish our own, you know. In fact, there was a newspaper that was published by MOVE. It survived in the three issues. It was called First Day, and it gave MOVE perspective.
That must be in some archives, maybe.
You can probably get it from MOVE headquarters if you call. I'll give you the name and address soon.
The MOVE headquarters in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, yeah.
That's talking about a newspaper that survived for a little while.
Yeah, it's called First Day. And it gave, you know, MOVE's insights on life, nature, health, politics, all those kinds of things, according to the teachings of John Africa. They were very, very well perceived among, you know, grassroots common people. The problem was that after its first few issues, MOVE couldn't even find a printer. You know, they couldn't, at first they couldn't find a typesetter, so the second and third issue were written by hand. You know, they were photocopied, but they were, you know, based on prints. Then they couldn't find a printer. No one would print it in Philadelphia. But it's called First Day, and there were several issues that came out.
Where is the MOVE headquarters?
1630 South 56th Street.
1630 South
56th.
56th.
Yeah. Philadelphia, 19143. And that's Alberta Africa is.
two things about
19143.
Yes.
About move relating to you, because we don't want to wander too far off into political theory at this stage.
Cool.
Your fight is worth prime thing, but does MOVE have an ideology of social change, which is translatable into terms that everyday people can recognize? That's question one.
Mm-hmm.
Question two is the meaning to you in terms of your adherence to MOVE and adherence to certain facts about life and society, of the ritualistic aspect of the movement and of your adherence, your coiffure, for example, and the I'll throw in and then quit. Is there a cult of John Africa, do you think, or is he just a symbol of committed, wonderful leadership?
Oh, that was a mouthful. To take your last question first, because it's clearest in my memory. There was reverence for John Africa among MOVE people because of how he touched people's lives. In the sense of cult, you can call it that. Cult has been a derogatory term,
yeah.
But MOVE, more than a political movement, embraces a holistic view that could be called a religious, social, and political movement.
And all cultural, of those kinds of, well, it's really cultural, it may not be cult, but it's a cultural,
absolutely,
kind of community.
That's what I would, I would say this, that like at Ramona Africa's trial, the prosecutor, who incidentally was my same prosecutor, used the words cult of resistance. I love the term.
Yeah.
Where he used the word.
It's not bad.
It ain't bad. I mean, great, great term. But, again, an attempted slur is kind of a backhanded praise. I would say culture of resistance is more precise. The word cult has been used to slander and slur people throughout history.
It's sort of a mindless kind of following. I think that's what people think, isn't it? Mindless,
Yeah. Well, I think one could hardly call MOVE members mindless.
Well, that's right. That's what I mean. That's what they mean by cult.
Mm-hmm. There is, without question, however, a deep, abiding respect and reverence for John Africa, for the clarity of his vision, the strength of his will, the determination to build people who came literally from nothing. MOVE members come from every walk of life. They weren't all prisoners, although some of us were turned on to the teachings of John Africa in prison. Some of the teachings of John Africa in prison.
Yeah.
There were some people who were drug addicts, some were teachers, some were Muslims, some were prostitutes, whatever walk of life there is. But they were attracted because of the clarity and the reasonableness of what was taught. When one regards and examines the teachings of John Africa, were you to get a volume of his writings, it may shock you, it may anger you, and you may be threatened by it. But one thing you will not be able to ever do about anything you've ever read that was written by John Africa is say that it was a lie, that it was untrue. Much in this system, in this society, will shock you, will threaten you, right? But what is threatened, rather than the truth, is people's identification with this system and the society. I say that to contrast about what I was telling you earlier about Black Panthers who got to a certain age or generation and gravitated away from the party Well, where did they go? They went back to the system, most of us.
Right.
You know? And that's because that system was still within us. It is precisely that core, that germ with which we are infected, that John Africa worked and works to dissolve and destroy within us all, so that there is no system within us to go back to. And that means destroying all of what this system represents within us. I'm saying that my memories of good, strong Panther brothers and sisters who had gone through confrontations with the system, when they got into the courtroom, were just like every other defendant. Heads bowed, you know, before the majesty and the awe of the law, except MOVE. Because MOVE had been taught, according to the teachings of John Africa, that was just a room like no other, that the truth is more powerful than any power on earth, that the judge is a representative of the system and not the truth, that he is just as political and devious and corrupt as the politician who wears a suit. Why should he be any less because he wears a robe? You see? And those are the kinds of things, those are the kinds of underlying reasons why you get that kind of vilification and vehemence and hatred of MOVE. Because it was and is the teachings of John Africa that strips the system naked, that pulls the robe off and says, you're still a racist bastard. I don't care what school you went to. If you're a racist redneck and you go and you get a master's in law, aren't you still a racist redneck? You're just one with a master's in law. You know. And because MOVE people refused to bow and submit in those courtrooms, something that I had seen every single Black Panther in my history do in those courtrooms, they've become the target of this system. I mean, it's like you can go and look at May 13, 1985, the bombing of Osage Avenue, and it may shock you. You know, it may, whatever, depending on your bent, you know, it may blow your mind. But what really should blow your mind is that no judge, no judicial officer in America, in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, has to this date condemned the bombing of May 13, 1985.
Really?
None. That no policeman, no politician who either participated, ordered, planned, or premeditated the mass murders of May 13, 1985 has ever, not been jailed, ever been indicted, charged, or tried with any crime. None. Not one.
Is any of that still in the courts for whatever that might be?
It's dead. The only thing that are pending in courts are civil actions, where the system 4 or 5 years from now will pay a few people a few million dollars. You know, it's hush money. But no criminal prosecution survived. Why? Because in Philadelphia, the district attorney of Philadelphia, Ron Castile, you will probably look throughout 200 years or 300 years of American history, and never will you see a prosecutor convene a grand jury and then instruct them not to return indictments. Well, what's the purpose of having a grand jury? You call them together to not indict? Well, why call them together? But in MOVE's case, that's what you had. You had the prosecutor call these people together, sit them down for a year, go through all the evidence, admit later that police came in and gave perjured testimony, lied to the grand jury, refused to indict any of the policemen for perjury, and then in a pre-typed, pre-prepared report, submit to the grand jurors, suggest that there is no case. We don't want you to indict anyone. You had federal prosecutors in Washington erect what they call a Chinese wall to separate them from the commission hearings in Philadelphia. Well, we're going to do this clean and open. Come back 4 years later and say, no crime committed to us. Case closed. So that you have no judicial, legislative, or law enforcement official in America condemning mass murder of innocents.
That's a pretty shocking indictment as you make it.
Yeah. I mean, if it's otherwise, someone point that out to me. If it's